NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
Yesterday, Auckland-based songwriter Lawrence Arabia, aka James Milne, released his Singles Club album. Singles Club has been a project long in the works. It's seen him put out a single a month, every month for the last year, so there's 12 singles. So yesterday they all came together in a beautiful package that you can buy and stream and enjoy. And so he came into the studio and had a little chat with me about the project, and we took a deep dive into some of the songs.
I'm Lawrence Arabia, the singer.
Congratulations on the release of Singles Club. It must feel good to have it out there after such a long time in the works.
Yeah, it's a total relief. Yeah, it's been a hell of a long time coming now. It's been a big part of my life for the last sort of 16 months or something. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how the concept sort of came to you, or what you wanted to achieve with the concept.
I think I'd been thinking about it, doing something like this, for a couple of years actually, because I'd sort of noticed that whenever I was thinking about writing my own songs, I would just get into a total panic. But then I was doing the Uncle Bertie's Botanarium podcast, and I had to write about 50 songs on demand, and lots of them were quite cool, and I thought somehow that worked. It's not like I can't write songs anymore. So I was thinking some sort of sense of urgency and obligation might help me produce music. But I was going to do something the previous year and then just completely freaked out about it. It sort of surfaced again. I had a whole bunch of demos that I'd been working on. And I guess the thing that catalyzed everything was when I wrote this email to Van Dyke Parks asking him to arrange a song, and him saying yes and then telling me how much it would cost, and then going, oh, I have to say yes to this, but it's going to cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that was when all those different threads of thought about wanting to make music, having lots of music sitting there, needing money, they all sort of came together into this idea that I'd do a subscription club.
There's 12 songs, one for each month you were releasing. Were they all recorded each month, one each month?
Give or take, yeah. They were. There were some that I, had little bits and pieces. Basically, at the beginning of every month, I'd kind of just sort of audit what I had, and the least offensive or the most appropriate, I'll just start working on like crazy, really. So it wasn't that I had a complete blank slate at the end, beginning of every month.
Sure.
Although I think everything's minimal. I wrote, devised, arranged, and finished within the month.
Yeah.
But I think maybe that was the only one that was, totally conceived within the month. But, most of them I had little iPhone things, or like half a verse sitting on my computer, kind of just waiting for the impetus to finish them.
So you're writing singles every month. That's kind of puts a lot of pressure on to have like killer songs every time, like all killer no filler sort of situation, right?
Yeah, I mean there was definitely that, the sense that everyone was going to be service to radio. That was, yeah, definitely influenced the way I was approaching the songs. There was no opportunity for, I think in general my songs, are pretty concise. But it definitely did. There was a strange sort of sense of purpose and terror or something. There was something going on that was very
different. Nothing motivates you like terror.
Yeah, no, terror was definitely involved, but it was involved in a good way, I think. But yeah.
Given that, there's a remarkable cohesion between the songs as well. Is that something you were keeping in mind through the whole process?
Yeah, I think subconsciously. I mean, my thoughts at the beginning, I mean, I think I wrote something on it on the Kickstarter thing, was that I was sort of almost hoping that it would be so all over the place that it would struggle to hang together. But then as it came to each month, I was almost responding to each song and,
you know, each previous song informed my decision about the next song to some degree.
Yeah.
In a way, a bit like if you're DJing or something and you're thinking, oh, what song is going to follow this one? But yeah, so I was doing that in sort of slow motion. Yeah, so it did, you know, and it developed a lyrical theme a little bit, and it just slowly kind of accumulated this sense of cohesiveness that I still didn't know it was going to be as cohesive as it is, but to me it feels like a record now.
Can you explain a little bit about where the recordings took place?
Yeah, I've got a studio in Eden Terrace in the mm-hmm. Dalmatian Cultural Society building, and it's just an office. It's a funny, dowdy little office. Could be the set of a Roger Hall sitcom. Most of the recording was done there. Mm. So, most of it I did pretty much a bedroom recording style. It was you know, just self, mostly me playing everything until I couldn't. Mm. I got drummers in. Mm-hmm. Alistair Deverick and Elroy Finn came in and did drums. And I sent a track off to Liam Finn as well. He'd played drums on A Little Hate. And mm-hmm. then I'd just get people in to play other things as well, string players. And and then the strings for the Van Dyke Parks arrangement, Just Sleep, were recorded in LA. And we recorded the woodwinds for that at Roundhead right at the end of the process.
Nice. So I've cherry-picked a few of the songs to ask you about. I thought we'd start with Solitary Guy being the first mm-hmm. track. I like the way this song builds, and it's a really nice piece of songwriting as well. What I find interesting, though, is that kind of royal we that you've used. What was the decision there?
Because I was imagining, I don't come into songs with a holistic idea of what it's going to be. I just start with a very small point of view and see where it leads. And so I think I was just imagining a group of dudes in a flat. So I think that's the we is the flatmates.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it feels like an individual experience. I kind of related to this song as an individual experience in a way, I guess, too.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just, there was something, it's very hard to rationalize the genesis of songs, but that was just the image that came to my mind, was this group of dudes in a gross flat and realizing that they were had no hope of ever being with the woman.
Material.
Like how the song, you know, it kind of builds, and then as it nears the end, it strips back away again, and it really hammers home that kind of solitary guy theme, I think.
Yeah, I think it did capture a certain kind of desolation at the end.
The next one I wanted to ask about was A Little Hate, which you're kind of verging into garage rock territory a little bit with this one, sort of fuzzy guitar.
Yeah. It was just I had a cool sounding demo I just put a lot of fuzz on it. Mm. And it just seemed exciting to me. It was definitely something I hadn't when I play live, I tend to flirt with loud guitars a lot, but it sometimes doesn't make it into my recordings. So it was nice to indulge that rock side a little bit more on this record, I think.
And you've got Heather from the Brunettes singing with you on that one. How did that come about that she joined you there?
I just heard the need for it. I kind of imagined, I'm not even sure if this happens in Snapper, but I kind of imagined this sort of unison male and female vocal thing. It's quite buried in the mix. Mm. And it just adds a little sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if Liam Finn's playing drums.
Okay.
a song about internet trolls?
Yeah, it is about that. I mean, I guess it's just about trolls. Well, anyway, I mean, it's not even necessarily about trolls. It's just about people getting their sort of suppressed rage out by doing dumb, snarky stuff on the internet. Mm. And, yeah, I mean, full-on trolls, yeah. But ultimately, again, it's about, it's, you know, and it's probably about, like, there's a, the bridge bits about how you don't get to experience these, what was it, your lips on the
paper cup?
Paper cup and the cold chill you feel in an empty mall and the warm light on the back of your eyelids. Like, it was just about, yeah, it's kind of a similar thing to Solitary Guys. It's about people being isolated and not connecting with the beauty of life, or, yeah.
The next song I picked out was Cecily, and I wondered if you'd named this song after someone in particular, if it just kind of rhymed with telepathy.
Yeah, it was a nonsense song, and there's definitely no specific Cecily. I don't know. It was kind of a, I haven't listened to it back again, but I had a much slower version. It was meant to be it was kind of a Syd Barrett ripoff song. Cecily was just kind of like a twee, you know, kind of twee psychedelic English girl's name.
Yeah,
they'd
right.
be having a lovely psychedelic picnic, drinking tea and frolicking in a daisy dress in an English park. So yeah, it started there, and then there was a bit too much tweeness in that recording, and I couldn't live with it. But then I just went really fast, and it worked, and it was able to offset that tweeness a little bit.
Psychically, I stare into your head, see a slice of wholemeal bread. This means you're hungry.
Cecily. It's a great song. Meaningless Words. We're sort of in the middle cluster of songs now. I love that bassy sound of the... It's a bass clarinet, I think, underpinning sort of everything in this song.
Yeah, it's a baritone sax.
Oh, baritone sax. Yeah. That's what I first thought, but I wasn't sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's got clarinets. I think I can't remember what I ended up with, because I recorded with Jeff Henderson, and he just brought a bunch of his woodwinds in and did a whole heap of stuff, and then I kind of carved out. We just went on for hours doing lots of harmonies, and then I kind of just carved a few of them out and ended up with a 3 or 4 part harmony. But I think there's two clarinets and a baritone sax on there.
I think there's something about the baritone sax. It just kind of, it's like the sort of underlying hum of your body or something. I don't know what it is. It really appeals to me, that sound.
Yeah, it's good. And it reminds me of like a ship's horn as well. Yeah, the sort of, it's just, yeah, it's got a lot of weight.
Yeah. There's lighter sounds in that too that I couldn't quite pick. It's almost xylophony, but I wasn't
there's
sure.
There's a glockenspiel and pizzicato violin as well, which they double up in that second verse.
I think you're talking about floating on clouds, and then there's these little sort of sounds.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's that little bit where it goes floating on the clover. And
clover.
Then it goes bloom, bloom,
yeah.
Bloom, bloom.
Meaningless words. Pour them out into the void for you to party, for to keep me employed. Just for my
People Are All Right. I think this is my favorite lyrically. I feel like I pick out the ones that are a bit like taking a dig at humanity.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of, I think, you know, that is when I was alluding to the theme of the record. I think that is, it is the theme of the record. It's kind of, you know, reckoning with the world today a little bit. And I've always shied away from being a kind of major issues songwriter, but it was hard to ignore this time. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely, I guess I just tried to reckon with it in a kind of comic way. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with the lyrics of this song. It's pretty funny.
I mean, it has the upswing. You sort of like resolve that people are generally pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, it was just, you know, it's very easy to get overwhelmed with a sense of misanthropy, and I think people are, I mean, maybe it's just an age thing, but I'm just really struck by how many people I know that are depressed.
Mm.
And it's overwhelming the way the world is, or the, you know, and the way it's reflected back at you constantly. But I was just, you know, and I'd written this song, and the song was originally just called Everything Shit. And I didn't, and there was no leavening of that sentiment. It was just, and it was, you know, I was written at a time when I felt depressed, and I just wrote, and it was funny. I laughed at it, but it was still like pretty, pretty unrelenting. And then Sean Donnelly said, oh, maybe you could lighten that up a bit or something. And then at some point I was going for a walk on a beautiful day in Christchurch, and there was just some, I can't remember what people were doing, feeding the ducks or something. Mm. And I was listening to some nice music on my headphones, and I was just struck by the fact that actually there's a lot of beauty in the human world, and people are really sweet.
People, they often have too much to drink. They feel the need to stand up and fight you. They get in your face and they ruin your day. And everything's shit. So shit. They sometimes own SUVs, feeling the need to drive like an asshole, filling parking space with their German case of seven spoiled kids. All of them claiming that they're the unlucky ones with their flavored vapes and their racial hate, looking so cut, so cut. Thank you.
In that song, there's a little sound, and I was listening back to it, trying to pick it out. Is it a harpsichord?
Harpsichord, yeah.
Because it kind of pops up in other songs too, I think.
Yeah, there's a Claire Cowan, the composer, lent me this harpsichord.
Claire Cowan from Auckland Philharmonic Orchestra?
She's definitely done arrangements for them, and she does. She's got a thing called Blackbird Ensemble.
Oh, right, okay.
She would definitely have had works performed by the APO.
Mm-hmm. So she lent you this harpsichord?
Yeah, because I'd never even met her, but I wrote on Facebook that I was hoping to find a harpsichord, and this was for Everything's Minimal. And then we met, and I recorded her harpsichord for that song. And then a couple of months later, she was going away to Europe for a couple of months, and she said, "Do you want to look after my harpsichord?" And I ended up with it sitting in the studio for about 6 months, which I'd never really played until that song came along, and I needed an instrument to play that part. And I thought, oh, I should probably use this harpsichord that's been sitting there for, you know, 4 months or whatever.
How complicated is it to play a harpsichord?
It's simple. It's just it's exactly the same as tuning as a piano, and it's the same keys. So it's simple. The hardest part was tuning it, because it goes out of tune all the time, so you have to manually tune it with a tuning thingamajig. I don't know what it's which takes quite some time, because there's two strings for every key. So it probably takes 45 minutes to tune it or something. But it's simple to play. It's cool.
The last song I wanted to ask you about, which is the closing song, Just Sleep, Your Shame Will Keep. From what I understand, this song was written for your podcast, which you mentioned earlier, Mysterious Secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium. I'm not going to be able to say it.
It's not even a word.
Botanarium.
It's not even a word, so I think it's fine to mispronounce it.
But for this, you got Van Dyke Park, and he brought along the sounds of piano, accordion, scratch woodwind, and double bass. Is that
correct? Yeah, I mean, the scratch woodwind was just the five he sent through MIDI. You know, MIDI files of a woodwind section.
Okay.
When he sent through the final thing that he'd done.
So, for those who may not be familiar, could you explain who Van Dyke Park is?
Yeah, Van Dyke Parks with an S.
Parks.
Yeah,
my bad.
It's all right. He is just a figure in Los Angeles music, I guess, and he is a great arranger. And he wrote the lyrics for the Beach Boys album Smile. He wrote the lyrics for Heroes and Villains, just these very dense literary lyrics. And then he was a producer at Warner Brothers in the 70s, and he made some records of his own, but he produced a lot of records and did string arrangements for a lot of records, and was involved with, you know, people like Harry Nilsson and Ry Cooder and Little Feat. And since then, he's just been arranging the things for people, like a lot of people. You know, I discovered recently they did the string arrangement for the end of a U2 song. He's just he's an eccentric character who arranges music, basically.
He's certainly put an eccentric sound on this song.
Yeah, he went to town on it.
Yeah, he did. So what made you want to reach out to him?
I just always admired him as a figure, and had really loved some of the arrangements he did. There's a song called, I think it was Emily, on the Joanna Newsom record Ease, and it was, you know, it's a long song, and it's just got the most incredible string arrangement that goes all the way through it, all over the place, and I was just really blown away by that, especially. And I also loved some of his solo records, especially this one called Discover America, which is basically a covers record of mainly Calypso songs that he's arranged. But it's a really fun record, and there's, you know, really neat arrangements on it. And I just admired that stuff. And then I saw him live about 6 years ago and really loved it. And there was a situation where I was, you know, he was sitting at a desk signing records, and I was like, I want to buy a record, and I didn't have enough money to buy a record, and then I was too ashamed to go up and talk to him without the record. That had always been sitting there as a regret. I don't know. He's a figure in our lives. Like when we used to have the Little Chief, when I was involved with
the brunettes and stuff. He was, you know, the Beach Boys' Smile was kind of one of the totemic records that inspired the people at that label. And so I think it was just, he was just a figure that was in my musical folklore.
So when it came to getting him to rework Just Sleep With You, how did you broach it? Were you like, here's the bones of the song, do what you want?
Yeah, I didn't consider directing him in any way. And I didn't even, when I went to him, I didn't even know I wanted to ask him to arrange that song. I just sort of, I just had a vague sense. I had this vague sense I wanted to ask him to arrange a song, but I hadn't actually got as far as thinking, oh, what song would I ask him to? And it just happened that that was the only song that was, that seemed to suit him potentially, and that, that I had, that was finished and that was there and available. So I just sent him a very, I made a very basic demo, and that's all he wanted. And then he sent back this huge extrapolation on it. You know, just the demo I sent him was just very, you know, 10-year-old boy. You know, my piano skills as a 10-year-old boy. You know, that's as far as I got when I was learning pianos or something. So I was, you know, that's like that's on the demo. It's just me playing very basic waltz piano. And he just sent back this, you know, he cut a whole extra section into it and made a woodwind arrangement and, turned this into this kaleidoscopic thing.
How'd you feel when you heard it?
I was just sort of flabbergasted, really. I was definitely, I just couldn't, I guess I started imagining what it might be like. And so when it came through, it was just really kind of befuddling, actually, but, you know, totally exhilarating as well.
Count to 10.
That was Lawrence Arabia talking about his new record, Singles Club. On Wednesday, he'll be kicking off an album release tour in Christchurch and then making his way through Oamaru, Dunedin, Queenstown, Napier, Wellington, Pai Kakariki, and then he'll finish up in Auckland with two shows, one on Friday 26th of April, the other on Saturday 27th of April, both at the Hollywood Theatre. For more details on that, I'd head to Under the Radar, where you can also pick up tickets.
That was Longplayer. Thanks NZ On Air Music.